and we are suffering seriously from this little knowledge problem today. We have tremendous skills, and as Lord Bacon pointed out, we have all these wonderful discoveries to lead us to a better life. But those who have come part way along the path have failed to make the great step forward. Therefore, they are, in a sense, bound still to the subterranean vaults of the temple and may not go out again. In other words, they will not be permitted to go back and betray the esoteric knowledge that has been given to them. The individual must grow according to his internal abilities. And when he reaches a point where he can no longer grow, or where he makes a major failure because he refuses to accept personal responsibility for conduct, he is then deprived of further participation in these rites, at least for the present embodiment. So here we have now a problem that shows that that was a wise rule, namely that we have this world of partly educated human beings who can no longer admit their ignorance because of sophistication, but have no right to consider themselves wise. We have a mass of people who have been spoiled, in a sense, by materialistic education. They have suddenly come to believe they know everything, when in reality, all of this sophistication has become merely a way of excusing or advancing armaments of one kind or another. The individual says he is learned, but he has not become learned enough to refrain from killing. Therefore, he has a dangerous knowledge, and he cannot be made to forget it, but he can be made to redeem the motives behind his use of that knowledge, and this he has to do. He has to discover why the knowledge which he has failed to ensoul is detrimental to himself and all other things that live. Today, his knowledge is his great strength. He is so proud of his knowledge, he can hardly stand it. But this knowledge is not making him good. It is not making him kind. It is not making him build a monument to world peace. He cannot do these things because his education hasn't fitted him for it. It hasn't fitted him to realize that there must not be more knowledge than there is integrity. When his skills are greater than virtues, there's always trouble in this world, and there always will be. So it all comes back again to the individual. And most people have little worlds of their own that they can live in. They're not really in such desperate difficulties that a little conscious intelligence is going to hurt them. They can make constant minor improvements in themselves. And these improvements will add up to a dedication. And dedication is the beginning of true religion. The individual who is so dedicated that he no longer criticizes, that he no longer hates, that he no longer seeks to destroy others or carry slander or gossip or consciously intelligent and intentionally dissolves or dishonors his integrities. These things can go on, and we can become just nice, plain, good citizens. And in the process of becoming nice, good, plain citizens, we are influencing a generation of young people that is growing up for the moment under our care, but ready to escape almost instantly into the wild and rugged world that we are frightened with. As we develop integrities, we draw around us people of similar minds. Strength becomes more natural and more common. And little by little, the generation itself will ask for what it needs. We know that we are on the thresholds of great change, that we are in great need of a universal reformation of our entire concept of existence. We have come as far as savagery can come, and any further it destroys itself. So we are now looking more and more for the insights that are necessary to solve problems. Now, all over the world, there are people with ideas on these subjects. Some are pretty good, some are not so good. But there are people everywhere who know or think or believe that these changes are coming, that we're going to have to make an entirely new statement of values, that we cannot keep on going in the same old way, foreclosing on each other's mortgages forever. We cannot keep on going the way we have with no consideration for the internal well-being of any living thing. All we want is the gratification of personal ambition. This has been the mistake from the beginning, and all the great forms of education have not been able to dissolve this or get it out of our systems. Now, the one enemy that education probably either dislikes or wishes to ridicule out of existence is religion. Religion is an interference with materiality. It is something that may cause the individual to lose the opportunity to become wealthy through questionable means. Religion might make him honest when honesty does not pay, and it may also prevent him from being employed in an institution in which honesty is obnoxious. But these problems go on. But the world as a whole is beginning to wake up. All over the world, people are killing each other for no good reason. They are fighting to make profits for somebody else. They are fighting to maintain beliefs and superstitions that have been forced upon them and are being played upon by despots and tyrants. Therefore, these things must change. And the only way that we can change is to realize that when your creed tells you that you should go out and fight, there is something else that might tell you to stay home and keep the peace. That there is perfectly possible to solve all these problems without killing each other. But the same thing that we find in our home, every so often a family gets into a distressful situation and murder follows. Someone kills somebody and there is a great tragedy that has come up in the lives of simple people. We must get away from this type of thing. We must get away from it by the simple process of putting a discipline upon our integrities. You can start with a little book and a pencil or something of that nature, and you can say that on a certain day that you were rude to someone on the telephone, that you were busy and you just didn't want to be bothered. And you can make note of this occurrence. Then maybe a week later, it may repeat itself. Somebody else will come on the phone while you have something in the oven, and that will be a catastrophe. So you will give a rather short answer on that occasion. About the third time, however, you should begin to say to yourself, this person who called me didn't intend to do me any harm. It may be a very friendly call, but I've shortened it very much and indicated definitely that I didn't appreciate it. So maybe something ought to be done about that. Maybe I should take a postgraduate course in telephone manners and find out how it should be done. Then the individual will suddenly realize that there's no school where he can get that information. He has to get it himself by his own thoughtfulness. On other occasions, there may be something in which there is absolute deceit or something of this nature. Where there's actual deceit, it is the moral need of the individual to recognize that deceit and correct it if possible. But this correction should be without hatred, without any horrible emotions. It shouldn't end in never speaking to anybody again. It should be brought up, frankly, simply, that this person is wrong, and that when the wrong is righted, we shake hands and go on. The problem of nursing grievances always ends in a great need for biofeedback. Somebody has to get into the point and try to clean out our own emotional natures. But we do it ourselves much more easily, quietly, and confidentially. And the way to do it is simply to watch. Make note of habits that you would not really want to nurse, but you have done it so long you don't think, we don't realize what we're doing. We just repeat ourselves like parrots. And see if we can figure out how to meet these little problems. The same thing is very important in helping children to grow up. Every child is going to pass through difficult periods. And today, there is a serious situation arising because of the homes in which both parents are employed. Here, children are left at wit's end. And why? Because of the financial problem. The financial matters become so impressive and so important because of the pressure of inflation everywhere, that the two-family working unit is quite common these days. But the children are paying for it some way. So whatever time is available, it is very important that the child be given every a bit of integrity that we can give them. And if it's only a half an hour a day, we should try to make them understand what we mean, what we're trying to do, and that we want them to have the best that there is. Get them early enough and you can do it. Get them too late and they will leave home. All these things have to be worked out. Because actually, these young people are the future. And long after we are gone, these are the ones who are going to dogmatize, criticize, antagonize, and tyrannize the world. We have to do something about it. We have to get at it and do it even at the expense of our own feelings. We could certainly leave off a large part of our television entertainment with no loss to anybody. And give this time to trying to share together the material that constitutes a proper family relationship. One of the most simple ways of approaching all of these things, of course, is religion. The sociological answers are imperfect and exceedingly profane in one way or another. But the religious background is usually available to someone, member of the family, and has the authority and the weight of a general acceptance. And here we try to keep young people to keep their bodies clean, to keep their minds clean, and to grow up a credit to themselves so that they can become a constructive force in the revolution of society. And that this revolution can be peaceful, a step forward into integrities, which will never be painful except to persons who well deserve to be hurt. And they'll recover because as long as they are not corrected, they are continuing to destroy themselves. So we try to find different ways of getting at these problems. Entertainment is very important in a proper understanding. The media is very important in bringing these things to people. And what is most important, perhaps of all, is the people who can have what they want. The media, the educational field, television, will always cater to the desires and moods of people. It will do all that it can to maintain an audience. And when the simple individual asks for something better in a large enough voice, he will get it. Therefore, Reformation doesn't begin with revolution. It begins with a simple statement of what we believe is right and an insistence that it be fulfilled. As long as the individual, the adult, sits at home glorifying crime on television, he will not change the life of his children. But where he turns it off, the child, still more or less addicted to the veneration for the parent, will probably follow example. Then something else can be done instead, which is better for both or all concerned. So we just start out with dedications, just doing things day by day, little by little. Something a little better than we have done it, so that others can see this. Very often our dedications become so obvious that they really influence other people. Mother Teresa is an example of this. The whole world, Catholic, Protestant, Christian, and non-Christian, respects this woman simply because she made a tremendous dedication. And this dedication will live when all the ambitions of tyranny will fade away. Albert Schweitzer made a great dedication to the service of humanity. And his type of achievement is more lasting, more valuable, and better honored than these little shallow successes that we are now considering so important in the life of the person. Everywhere, the great dedications do hold. And we can all grow up to being part of a world that wants this type of dedication. That we can do something to gradually bring about a peaceful reclamation of society. Commitment will not do it because it is a commitment to something that exists. Dedication does it, however, because it is a dedication to something that, while it does exist, is not known or not appreciated, not understood. And dedication is the bringing forth out of ourselves of the light of truth as it has been given us to possess this light. And as the ancients in their religions all agreed that there was a divine power at the source of life, we have tried to avoid this commitment for a long time now, substituting for it a mass of political mistakes, of social errors, of educational fallacies, and of economic excesses. We have tried in every way possible to drown out the realization that there is a power greater than ourselves. Dedication then now becomes a commitment to that power. It is a dedication to the realization of the eternal good at the source of life, the eternal realities which must be served, rather than the temporal conditions and activities with which we are familiar. Somewhere hidden in this world of countless change, there are evidences of this immovable reality. Our nation was brought into existence as a means of advancing the destiny of the human race. It was brought to us as an offering to a need that then existed, of a tyrannized Europe afflicted with wars, poverty, crime, and death. A new opportunity for growth, a new opportunity in a fresh, clean world to build closer to the heart's desire. We have had this, and for a time we nursed it very willingly and very heroically. But gradually success has taken over. Today the original principles on which this country was founded are virtually forgotten. We are no longer concerned with providing a new example of a better world. What we are now desirous of doing mostly is taking over world markets, becoming the principal businessman, banker, and broker for humanity. This is not the destiny for which we were intended. It is part of a destiny that has failed everywhere else and will fail here unless we change our attitudes. We are here for the improvement of mankind. We are here with special privileges and blessings that no other nation on earth has. But these blessings must be paid for by dedications, by a constant maintenance of watchfulness, by vigilance in all matters, and by a careful control of our own emotions and appetites. Unless we personally become citizens of a new world order, this world order cannot fulfill itself. We cannot allow the great dream of mankind to fail. Here we have today on earth nearly 6 billion human beings. These masses of people will no longer survive under the pressures of ancient customs. The principles that brought them into existence were right, but gradually they have all failed these principles. Nowhere in the pattern have the principles that were right ever failed man. But man, time after time, has compromised his principles until they are no longer distinguishable. But here these 6 million people, 6 billion people, on a little ball in space, and the world is mine, saith the Lord, and the abundance thereof. This entire problem that we have is, what we've forgotten is that we have a landlord. We have a landlord which we all have to maintain relations with. The real ownership of this planet does not rest in our hands, nor can it be subdivided for reasonable profit. This world belongs to a power far beyond us. For that which was able to create it is greater than that with which we are trying to destroy it. So this world belongs to a series of principles. It is dedicated to a purpose. It is part of a great evolving mystery in space. It is something that is so stupendous, so incredible, that if we really think a little, we will be bowed to contrition by the mass of it all. It is a tremendous point. And in this are millions of peoples, many of them dying of starvation, many of them killing each other, in a world in which we were given beauty and truth and wisdom. The reason we have these problems is because we have drifted away. The strong nations, which should have become the teachers of the weak, became their masters. All the virtues which man tried to develop have been smothered by the avarice of certain limited groups of individuals. We are in a very bad condition, therefore. And unless we do something about it, the condition is not going to improve very rapidly. I do not believe that the world is going to end, and I don't believe humanity is going to cease. But I think they're going to experience what we have all experienced since the beginning of history, that things will continue to go from bad to worse until the human being passes from worse to better. We've got to change. We've got to recognize that we were not created for the false ideas that we are now nourishing. We were created as a great unity of life. We are all members of one family. We are brought together to the purpose of understanding, of sharing together the blessings of life, of living moderately, protecting the well-being of each other. And exploitation is a grievous error that is afflicting us all. So I think the thoughtful person of today must begin to recognize the overplan. And that is where his dedication should be. His dedication should be to the right, so far as it is given to him to know the right. To live always the best of himself. To live always for the good of all that come under contact with him. That he lives not for the profit he takes from others, but for the profit he can bring to others in their need for growth and understanding. So this dedication, I think, is largely now in the hands of what we may term the mystics. It has always been one of the strong points of mysticism, and it is one of the reasons why tyranny has always tried to destroy mysticism. Tyranny always wants to destroy man's faith in his own inner reality. It wishes to make him completely the slave and servant of a despotic group or individual. Man cannot serve two masters, and the worldly will not tolerate the unworldly. So we have gradually allowed ourselves to pass from the consciousness and directives of universal life to the very personal and destructive directives of sovereignty and bigotry. So these things we have to change. But most of all, in our changing and in the attitudes that we have on these things, it is necessary for us to have this one realization that has always been and always has to be. That there's, as Boyd Bacon says, he would believe and rather accept all the legends of theology than to believe that this universal fabric is without a mind. Somewhere there is out there or in there a tremendous power. A power that we can never destroy. A power that we can never frustrate. But a power that can become the basis of all that is worthwhile and good for ourselves in this world. We are living in a world that is law-abiding, and we are trying to break the rules. We are living in a world in which love is the great bind, and we are trying to prove that strength and fear are the great relationships. All this is completely false. We are therefore reminded that if we do not keep on with our present practical program, we will lose all the advantages gained by selfishness, exploitation, and destruction. The sooner we lose these advantages, the longer we will live. The longer we will develop into the ways that we should be. It is obvious that we are advancing towards a time when we will have the right and the power to control most of the elements of nature. We will be able to make great changes in the securities of life. We can extend the duration of life and health. We can have abundance of everything necessary for our happiness and security. These things can all be when we begin to recognize that there is a destiny that requires them. That the dedications that we must have the dedications to that which is eternal, eternally true, inevitably right. These are the dedications that count. And wherever they are frustrated, we are in trouble. But we can start by a little quiet estimation of our values. We can begin to see the blessings that we have. We can see the wonders that have come to us through all the ages of our early growth. We can look with admiration and almost with awe upon our present condition. We can realize the mystery of our own body, something so completely sublime, so mysterious, so infinitely wonderful, that no scientist has ever been able to explain it or ever will. There is so much of grandeur, so much of glory, so much of good everywhere, that there's no need to constantly glorify the mistakes. Nor is there any need for this great pessimism that is developing, that nothing is anything, futility is inevitable, that we can't do anything about anything. We can do anything we want to about anything, if it is within the law. If we stay in the pattern of the divine purpose, we can grow forever. If we continue to make the mistakes, we will grow, but we will grow painfully through the distress we have brought upon ourselves and our neighbors. So I think the mystic approach is the thing the world is desperately needing. And every religion to date has had mystical overtones. Everyone has realized somehow that you couldn't put the great truths in a book. You could write them only on the living substance of the human heart. The great books are really revelations of a great love in the heart of life itself. Those who wrote those books in past ages were very close to the realization of the infinite love of God, the love of the eternal, whether it be a person or a vast principle. The love of that which is creating for that which it fashions, and which by they are bound together by an infinity of prayer of powers and a network of continually interchanging factors. This we know somehow is the way it is. We may not know it all now, but if we must believe anything, why not believe the best? If we cannot prove anything, why not cling to that which, in proven, would be the greatest of all things? We do not know all that there is to know. But one thing we know, that when we are kind, things go better. When we are cruel, we ultimately become ashamed of ourselves and all that we have done. So by making a careful analysis, by transforming a commitment into a living dedication, we won't do what is accredited with a gentleman who was rather lazy and who had a very beautiful version of the Lord's Prayer written out and hung in a frame over the head of his bed. Each night when he went to bed, he pointed at it and said, "Those are my sentiments," and went to sleep. Well, maybe we need that. We need something for those sentiments. There's no question about that. But these sentiments come inside of ourselves. And when we have the commitment from within, it is a dedication. And where we can follow all kinds of faiths and make the same mistakes, it is not enough. So it's time for us to begin to restore the integrities of life in our own personal living. And if we do this, and enough people do this, gradually and quietly, despotisms will vanish from the earth. It is just a matter of the individual so living that he demands a better way of life. And there's plenty of opportunity and a wonderful world in which these dreams can all come true. Well, that's it, folks.